That's one of the reasons why I chose to go in a startup is because I like to wear different hats, basically. Like, I think like when you're bigger companies, you get hyper-specialized.
These are originally live chat sessions that I held, and you can join them in the future every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST on sales.n.pixels on Instagram. My name is Koji, and this is Sales and Pixels.
Hey, Malia.
Hey there. Koji, how are you?
Good. Long time no see.
It's been a while. It's been a couple years, I think.
Couple of years. Thanks for accepting my invite.
Of course. Super glad to be here.
All right. Okay, let's get this started. I was looking at your resume and LinkedIn. I was like, okay, let's see all the other things that Malia did in the past. And I was surprised that, or maybe not too surprised, because many of us start in graphic design. I also started with graphic design. And a lot of people ask me, like young designers, like how was your transition from graphic design to product design? And I would love to hear your story a little bit.
Yeah, of course. And please let me know if you don't hear me well. This is my first time doing it live.
It's perfect. Working super well so
far. Awesome. Great. I did graphic design long time ago, like over 10 years ago. And, you know, I think in the past couple of years, I kept joking, oh, I don't know that it helped me in what I do today. But I realized today that it's kind of unfair to say that because... I think a degree in graphic design does help you acquire tools to communicate a message visually, which is very important what we do in UX, of course. But as far as the transition, for me, it wasn't too hard because before going to college in graphic design, I did a program between high school and college in multimedia. In Quebec, where I'm from, they have this in-between school. It's kind of like a prep school. And I did multimedia for 3 years. So I did that. And then, you know, going into college, I already kind of had the training to do more like digital media. So I was already producing websites. And I actually got my first kind of design agency job when I was in college. And it was completely focused on digital media. So I didn't necessarily do a lot of graphic design. Like even after I graduated from college in graphic design, a lot of my friends would go in advertising or just go like do branding. But I just stuck with website design at the time. You know, UX wasn't necessarily a thing.
Mm-hmm. Probably web design.
Yes, it was web design. And, you know, people who are in their 30s will remember Flash. So I would make like Flash websites, HTML websites, would do like these little animated banners that you see, these ads that you see on websites today. So I did a lot of that earlier in my career. So the transition wasn't too hard for me. I continued working in agencies for a while. And of course, I think when I joined Google, there's just like a wealth of knowledge in terms of UX. And I just learned so much. I think like all of the UX methods and research and like the more academic stuff that you'd learn today in like UX school, I think, I kind of learned it all from Google. Just because, yeah, it's just so resourceful.
Awesome. I think you touched a very interesting topic because, one, I think graphic design was what we had in the past. And of course, like we're grateful and we learned a few things that helped us over the time. But I'm curious about what are the things that maybe school didn't prepare you to the daily work? And not even on like, you know, just on thinking about like the type of work that you did, but also thinking about the school today, even if you go to interaction design or UX design, I don't know how they call these days, I think there are still missing a few things there that you can't learn in school. And I would love to hear your perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because when I started Elk, we initially were focusing on college students and really focusing on how it was difficult for college students to transition from college to actual work experience. What I would tell a lot of the students was, try to focus on trying to get internships. Like, getting experience in the workplace is super key when you're trying to get a job. And I realize today it's really tricky because of the pandemic, obviously. But there are still ways, you know, you can get little gigs here and there. But in school, I think they don't necessarily emphasize as much on like the collaborative aspects. I think you work in teams, but you don't necessarily work with like a boss and peers and this whole dynamic of the workplace, you know? And so that's why I think if you can get an internship or just get a gig in a company and just get a little bit of experience, even if it's just like a contract, it helps a ton. And just while you are in college, if you can get a couple of these, I think, you definitely are ahead of the curve once you do graduate.
To work with different people, maybe people who think different from you and have different background, I think it helps, right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Just step outside your comfort zone. It helps.
Awesome. And you already talked a little bit about that, but you live in Quebec. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Canada, of course, and San Francisco, New York. And I'm curious what attracts you in these cities and why did you choose one city versus another? And maybe what's your next city in mind?
Yeah, it's interesting. I grew up in a suburb of Montreal. So that's in province of Quebec in Canada. Mm-hmm. I moved to Montreal proper, like the city, when I was in college because I was going to college in Montreal. Montreal is a really fun city. I don't know if you've been to Montreal. It's very vibrant. It's very artistic.
I've never been to Canada yet.
Oh, really?
Planning to, yes.
If you try to go now, they'll have you quarantined for a couple of days.
Yeah,
if
not
you're
now.
Traveling from
maybe
the
later.
US. Yeah, maybe later.
Yeah.
I think Montreal, it was close to, you know, my parents, my family, and I was going to college. So it's not like I necessarily chose to move there, but it was a lot of fun. It's super creative city. It's like a lot of people say that, it's the most like European city in North America. So you can get that vibe a little bit. But then after college, I got dragged to San Francisco by a boyfriend at the time. And it's funny because I don't think I'm a very spontaneous person. I tried to be prepared, but I showed up and I just had no plan.
That feels very spontaneous to me.
I know. I would never do that today. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe I don't give myself enough credit, but I moved here. I'm in San Francisco today. I moved here. I had no plans and I was actually really scared because I had no money. I was pretty broke, just out of college. And I'm Canadian, so I needed to get a visa. So I needed to get a job pretty quick. Who would be willing to sponsor me for an H-1B, which today is just... I mean, I feel really bad because today it's really, really hard. But I got really lucky, I think. So I moved here in 2008 and it was just like the perfect time to, as a designer, to come to San Francisco. And eventually, you know, a couple of years passed and I was single and I thought maybe I should try a different city because, you know, I didn't necessarily choose San Francisco and a lot of people were moving to New York. A lot of people were saying, hey, you seem like a New York kind of person to me. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll try it out. And then I moved it to New York in 2015 and I was very fortunate because Google actually transferred me. They agreed to sponsor my move and they helped me out. So that was really cool. But honestly, I didn't really like New York. And I know people love New York and everyone love their, you know, their own thing.
That made me surprised.
I know.
Because I remember when you moved, I was like, okay, I think you love New York. Now you're saying that you didn't like that much.
I don't know what it was. I think it was, you know, it's like, it's a big city. I thought I was a city person, but it's a lot of city. I had, to be honest, I had a hard time making friends, and it was just like kind of overwhelming. I was missing my friends here. It was good in a sense that I was closer to my family and I could travel back to Canada every couple months, like every 3 months or so. But I really missed like going out of the city. Like when you're in New York, it's hard to go in nature the way it is here. It's just different. And so after 2 years, I was like, okay, stop lying to yourself. You don't want to be here. And I moved back to San Francisco in 2017, and that felt most authentic to me. Like I chose to move back because I thought California was where my heart was. And, you know, I moved back not for the city itself, but I moved back for the Redwoods and the Pacific Ocean. And I know it sounds super cliche, but like the mountains, and it's, I don't know. It's hard
when
you've experienced it.
That's what I love about here too.
Yeah.
So easy to get a bike and, you know, ride a bike in Marine, or, you know, it's a city, but it's close, so close to nature.
Yeah. Are you in SF too?
Yeah. I'm in the Mission.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Nice. I'm in Potrero. We're not too far.
Oh, yeah. Some blocks away.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah,
But New York was a city that you actually chose to, and I'm curious about like why. Did you think like, oh, I want to check this box, or I want to try like a bigger city to see how it plays out? What was your thinking back then?
Yeah, I think it was something like I want to try it, and I don't want to regret it later. And now's the time to do it.
Let's
right?
Do it
I don't
now.
Have.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I had no obligations, like no mortgage, no kids, was single. I was just like, let's just try it out. If it doesn't work, you know, you test it, doesn't work, iterate.
Yeah. And do you have any plans for the future? Like, especially now with the pandemic, I know that many people are moving out or no?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because everyone is stuck at home now. And everyone wishes they had a backyard and a little bit more room for a dedicated office. I dream about that sometimes. But, you know, at the same time, like, I don't know that I'm ready to leave California. And I think in San Francisco proper, you're a little bit more safe, especially with the fires right now. Because I was looking at the East Bay. I was looking all around, but I don't know, with the fires, make me a little bit stressed to live in a fire prone area. So I think for now, I'm just going to hunker down, and see. I'm not opposed to leaving, but, I'm pretty attached. I'm pretty attached to this part of the world. Yeah.
Likewise for me, I got super in love with San Francisco the first time I put my feet here. Anyways, and I want to talk a little bit about your career, especially after Google, because I know you did a lot after. So after Google, you joined Wonder School as a head of design. And I'm curious about that, like you moving from a big company like Google, moving into a startup, and I guess you probably set up the design team there, and I don't know if you start from the scratch or if you team double, you know, there are so many stories like that. So I'm curious about your story.
Yeah, totally. The culture shock was real. And it's going from Google to a Series A startup, so it's very early stage. I mean, of course, there are earlier stages than Series A, but it's the kind of stage where you're hired into a role, but you kind of have to morph yourself into whatever needs to be done for the company to succeed, right?
Do everything designer type.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this is that's one of the reasons why I chose to go in a startup is because I wanted to learn to wear different hats, basically. Like, I think like when you're bigger companies, you get hyper specialized. And I loved that. But I wanted to try to learn like different functions. Like I don't think I took advantage of that enough when I was at Google. I was just, like, hanging out with design, UX, with product. But for example, I didn't really explore like how the sales team was working, right? To get back to your question, I joined Wonder School as head of UX, and they didn't have UX. They didn't have UX as a discipline. They didn't have designers or anything. And to be honest, like, scaling the team started with like me scaling myself to pretty much do everything on my own at first, which was really fun and a shock because I had been exclusively managing while at Google for the past couple of years. So I went back to doing hands-on design, and creating like full-on design systems and tackling product design, but also like the flyer that you want to put on the street. So that was really interesting. I did get to hire a designer full-time and two contractors, so two design contractors. And hiring in a Series A startup is very difficult. It's, you know, if I compare it to a bigger company like Google, where there's a ton of resources, Google has a dedicated team of recruiters, like recruiting best talent, and also designers, researchers, UX people, they all know Google. It's a brand name. It's a place where people want to work. Whereas like nobody has heard of Wonder School. And you can't really be competitive on the compensation side. So you kind of have to get them any other way. And for Wonder School, what I ended up doing is really looking for people who wanted to work somewhere where it's a little bit more mission driven and they like smaller teams specifically. And it all worked out, but it was definitely very different. Also, we didn't have an interview process. So like we didn't have really job descriptions, levels, interview process. So I kind of had to do it all from scratch and just like trust my own process and my own gut on like finding the right talent. Unfortunately, I did a good amount of it at Google, so it helped me. But as far as scaling the team, we didn't scale to be like 10 or 20 people, but we were four, and it was just a lot of fun. And then like trying to scale the design system too, while building a team is just another challenge, which it was just very interesting, just starting from scratch, yeah.
It's interesting because you went almost from like one extreme in terms of size of company to another extreme, which is Series A, which I didn't know. So how was your thinking process on like, what is my next step? Like, where should I land on? Was that the mission-driven aspect? Was it the education aspect?
When I left Google, and it was a super difficult decision to leave Google, I don't know if it was the same for you.
I know, because I did the same thing. I know it's hard.
Gosh, it took me, it took me a long time before actually deciding to leave. And then I wanted to be super deliberate about what I wanted to do next. I knew I wanted something that was a smaller team than Google, which is not that hard, but like, you know, very small team. I knew I wanted it to be something that's more mission driven. you know, I think like enterprise solves a ton, like there's a ton of work to do there, but it was just not for me. And I worked on some enterprise product at Google, and I just wanted a change. And I knew the CTO at Wonder School, the CTO co-founder. I had worked with him like 10 years ago, like now 12 or 13 years ago when I first moved to San Francisco. And it just felt right.
So you had a personal connection with someone.
I had. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. And to be honest, I don't know. I think I did it wrong, probably. Like, I didn't interview to a ton of places, but I don't know. I think I kind of became a more intuitive person over time. And I just knew, you know. And I was like, this is a really great fit. I want to work with you. I think there's a lot of potential. There's a ton to do there. And just the mission was really exciting to me, like more exciting than a lot of the other people I had talked to, other companies. So I just went for it, but it wasn't necessarily education per se, but it was, you know, something that's mission driven, something that's small, something where I knew I could have impact, which, you know, at Google, it was a little bit difficult. And you know you have impact because you literally have like millions of users, but they're just such big companies that it's sometimes hard to feel tangible impact.
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people, and I saw a lot of people who actually felt like, oh, I am part of a bigger team, but then because the team is so big, you end up making some small changes that sometimes it's hard for you to, I don't know, feel proud or be excited about it, especially for people who are new hires. So I can totally understand. And that's something that I talk a lot when people ask me what are the pros and cons of working in a company like Google, because there's certainly a lot of pros, but there is certainly a lot of challenges. And I think it's true for every single company.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, for sure.
I would love to, and I want to talk more about the enterprise because I actually work at Lyft Business right now. But that's not the idea here. I want to talk a little bit more about you. During the pandemic, which to me was like, okay, I was looking at, again, your LinkedIn. I was looking at the dates. I was like, wow, this is amazing. I really want to understand the courage and the motivation behind the idea of starting your own company during the pandemic. And I know it's all connect with your background of working with education, and maybe there's some connection there. But again, would love to hear again, what's your thinking and what are you doing on at ILK?
ILK, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, we're about to change names. It's like a temporary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not the only one who's like, why are you starting a company in the middle of a pandemic? I mean, look, so Wonder School ended up downsizing. So at that point, after I left, I had the choice to try to go to interview and try to find another role while companies were completely downsizing and fewer job opportunities were around. And I wasn't, you know, I didn't feel super optimistic that I would find something that I would be happy with in this moment in time. And at this point in my career, I'm very picky. So I had been talking to my now co-founders about, like, you know, potentially becoming a co-founder, and even before I left Wonder School, a little like at the same time as it was happening, and I thought this is just the, like, I don't want to go find a job that I'm not going to be happy with. I'm not sure the chances of my dream job being out there right now with the pandemic is very slim. At least that was my mindset. And I wanted to give it a go with like my own thing, because, at this point, like I told you, it's like, I'm very picky. I'm very opinionated on like how a company should be ran. And I was just like, let's just give it a go. And things are bad. Things are bad for everyone, you know? So it's not like it's worse for me now that I'm starting a company. It's just that it's the state of things. And actually, especially in childcare now, it's actually, it's not great timing. I'm not going to say it's great timing, but a lot of parents have children at home and they realize right now how childcare is important, but also super broken. So I think parents are super open to trying new things and creating new models. So in a way, I think it's good for us that we're starting this at this time.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more how it works, because I was fascinated with the idea of, you know, making it more efficient, the childcare process a little bit more efficient, because I have, you know, I'm Brazilian. I do have a lot of friends from Brazil. Some of them were taking care of kids when they moved to US. And I'm just curious about that. Like, how do you land it in this problem? And what do you think are the opportunities that you're trying to tackle there?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good segue. Actually, in America, there's about 20 million children under the age of 5. And there's a major shortage of supply in terms of childcare providers. So only half of them actually have access to childcare and preschool. And preschool is really important because it helps children get ready for kindergarten. And it helps them get, you know, development as far as social emotional milestones. And it's super expensive. And what we're trying to do is actually, and this is more the long-term vision, but it's actually increasing access. And right now what we did at Wonder School actually is like open in-home programs. So a provider could open a daycare or a preschool from their home. So we would increase supply that way. But the business model there is a little bit difficult because then you have to kind of charge them a lot of money for, you know, continuing to run your business. And I think childcare is especially tricky because there's not a lot of fat to trim. As my co-founder would say, like, parents pay a lot, providers don't get paid a lot. So what we found is that instead of trying to have providers open childcare from their homes where they don't necessarily have the living conditions to do that, like they have small apartments or they have roommates, we bring providers to the parents' homes. So a typical like nanny share, if you've heard of what it is, it's like someone sharing childcare with another parent, but we bring the caregiver to the family's homes. Because it is hard for them to afford living where dual income parents actually also live. And this works, I think a lot of people think of nanny share as working really well for infants. So really small children of age 0 to 2, but it actually works really well also for preschool age children. So, you know, you could hire a preschool teacher and create a mini pod or a pod of like 2 or 3 children or 4 in one of the family's home, and it becomes a little bit more cost effective and it increases supply because, like I said, like these preschool teachers can't necessarily open from their home. It's usually pretty risky, expensive. They don't have the conditions and so on and so forth. So right now we're pretty early. We actually just wrapped up YC, Y Combinator. And we're just like in full execution mode. So we're building tools to help them. And we're also building the marketplace where parents can find parents and can also find caregivers at the moment. We're pretty early, but we're super excited.
Wow. It's awesome. I love the idea. And I remember the first time I reach out to you and like, oh, I'm super busy right now, next month. Now I understand.
Well, yeah, I think the Y Combinator program was pretty aggressive, which it was really good, actually.
Cool. Awesome. Well, best of luck for you. All right. So for now, Malia, I have a section here where I call it rapid fire questions. Super simple. I just give you a word or a prompt and you give me whatever comes to your mind first. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay, let's do it. So, one hope for next year.
Coronavirus goes away.
Good. That's all we need. tip that you would give to yourself 5 years ago.
5 years ago, just take time to self-care, basically. It's a job, it's important, but it's just a job.
Awesome. Love that. Something that you learned that really changed the way you thought about design.
Actually, my biggest learning in the past couple of years, especially at Wonder School, is the way I approach customers and users. I got to do very scrappy hands-on research, and I think everyone should do that. And I know it's a little bit difficult when you're in bigger companies, but I don't know. I think I'd just encourage everyone to try. Just like go find your users in Facebook groups or on Craigslist or whatever and just like call them.
Love that. The most important thing when you think about a design team is?
I think balance, complementary strengths and talents and levels.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That was fun. Love it. Yeah. All right. So we are getting close to the end here. I really appreciate your time, Malia. I'm honored to have you here and I did learn a lot. So thanks for being here. I want to give you the last space to, you know, talk about anything or if you want to, you know, just, you know, use the space to talk about a project that you're working on or give some books for people to read, whatever you want to say, it's your space.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Koji. And I want to say that I'm honored to be here too and speaking with you. It's been so long. And I remember working with you and you being a rock star designer. So I'm like super glad that you're now head of design at Lyft for business. Yeah, I think last words, I didn't prepare for this. I should have, but I just want to say that Black Lives Matter. And please, you know, just do your reading and follow the events. I think it's really important that we talk about that and talk about equity in general in these difficult times. Yeah, I think that's it.
Thank you so much, Malia.
Thanks, Koji.
My name is Koji, and this is Cells and Pixels. Every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST on cells.n.pixels on Instagram. Thanks for listening.